click, click, click. And as they go and they get lit. And here we are, another radio fishing. And actually, it's quite surprising, but I actually got Robert back. Yes, here he is, Robert back in the studio. Trying to get more fishing reports up. Everything's just been crazy. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Frank.
So how was your vacation?
Incredible.
Incredible. So, now, most people vacation to go fishing, maybe water skiing or swimming or skiing or...
relaxing on the beach or camping or something, yeah.
And you go chasing poisonous stuff around. I mean, you were, a fertilance? You were within a few feet of a snake that's like kiss of death. I mean, eyelash vipers.
I was closer to the eyelash vipers than the fertilance.
All right, so...
I stayed safe with that.
Okay.
As safe as can be.
You did have a snake in your pocket while you were talking to a girl.
Yeah. Yeah, that was interesting.
Gee, thanks for expanding on that. God bless America. I'm sitting here, I'm feeding you freaking information, and you just want me to sit here at what? You get to do two-word answers? I'm sorry, it doesn't work that way, buddy. Cough it up.
I caught a little snake and was trying to take a picture of a parrot.
All right, where did you go?
Costa Rica.
You were in Costa Rica.
Yes.
And so you fly in San Jose?
Flew into San Jose, spent the night there, went to the volcano close to town. Saw an active volcano. That was pretty neat, and everyone was surprised that we saw it because like 90-95% of the time it's covered in clouds, but we had a clear view of it. It was pretty neat. No lava, but a lot of steam coming out of it, so it was pretty interesting to see. And then from there we went over to the lodge in the middle of the country towards RNL.
RNL's the mountain volcano.
Yeah, it's like probably one of the most photographed of all the volcanoes in the area. Or in the country, I would have to say, because the whole country is nothing but volcanoes.
Yeah.
But that one was active, pretty active up until, oh crap, I don't even remember, late 80s?
When I was there in 88, it was kind of steaming.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
My first time there up to that volcano, RNL, isn't it?
Yeah.
Was back in 88 when I went to Costa Rica the first time, and it was kind of cool because there's a stream that comes off the volcano and they divert it a little bit into a swimming pool.
Yeah.
And you can go swimming in the volcano water. And back in 88, it was like, when you were in Costa Rica, it was like being in the 1950s. I mean, it was really, especially in that remote area. And there was literally just a swimming pool and about a 6-foot bar, and they served a couple of drinks and stuff. And the volcano water would run in one side, and then they had a drain to run it out the other side. And back then, people would stop with their car, family would get out, and, you know, we get out, and we're looking at it, and all of a sudden, family pulls up, and they stop, they jump in the water, all their clothes, they just jump in the water, and swim around for a little bit, and get up, and dry off, and go back in their car. I mean,
yeah.
But it wasn't like they brought bathing suits or anything. They would just jump in whatever they were wearing, and, you know, I guess the volcano was supposed to have healing powers or something like that, and the water's always warm. I mean,
yeah.
It's coming off a volcano. They have to only bring in a small amount, or the pool would be way too hot. But I've heard now it's a pretty big tourist thing.
It's a huge tourist thing. I mean, they bring in busloads of people to that place. It's actually a lodge now. There's a hotel and everything there.
Yeah, and...
there's several hotels right there in the area, all around that.
When I was there...
whole,
I don't think there was another building for 2 miles.
Yeah.
I mean, it was as remote, and that was in 88, so
yeah.
It was just completely remote, and all of a sudden, here's this little parking lot and a swimming pool and literally a little 6-foot plank on a couple of, you know, uprights, and that was what they served a few drinks out of. I mean, it was...
to see it when it was really pristine.
Yeah, there was nothing.
Before it was commercialized.
There. Yeah, nothing there. It was really cool.
Well, I mean, even that first time the wife and I went down, we went to a park, and we got to see a lot of really unique things, and it was a primary rainforest, which means it's never been logged, so it's
right.
An original rainforest. We went back there with Loyal and his wife and Bob, and we stopped there, and now it's a lodge, and there's a parking lot. I'm like, I don't remember this place. This wasn't like this. And you ask the lady, and she's like, oh, no, we've been here for about 15, 18 years. It's like, okay, that's Tico time. It's only been there for about 10 or 11 years because we were there, what, 12 years ago?
Yeah.
You know, they still have all the primary forest, and they still have the trails. They actually have the trails blocked off now and only allow you to hike certain trails because the rest of it's still university and worldwide studies being done in that area. So I thought that was pretty neat.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. I mean, it's nice, but, you know, we all wish for the nostalgia. But on the other hand, I remember when I came to Port Charlotte, I mean, in August, you could play baseball on 41.
Right.
Every once in a while, stop for a car. The highways were all two lanes. There was no I-75. None of that stuff was here. So it happened. We all look at other places and go, oh, it's such a shame they did that. But when you look at here, from the Atlantic to the Mississippi was solid trees.
Yeah.
It was almost no clearings. And now it's just all open farmland. We had our own rainforest here.
Right.
We just wiped it out before our memory. So
absolutely.
It doesn't count. Because, you know,
back in the 1800s, as early as the early 1800s, they said that a squirrel could go from one tree to another from New York all the way to Illinois and never have to touch the ground.
Exactly. So, I mean, we did it to this country, so we always want to look at other countries and go, oh, why did you do that? Well, we did it here. It's just natural the rest of the world would do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know.
But it's still a beautiful place, and, I mean, safe for the most part. You know, every place has got its crappy areas, but...
Yeah, well, I mean, look at Tampa. There's a lot of Tampa I'm not driving in.
I don't even go to Fort Myers.
Yeah.
I mean, when do you look on the news and Fort Myers doesn't have something stupid going on there?
So, yeah, other countries ain't any better anyways.
But for a country that's primary language is Spanish, you know, go there, and everyone, because my Spanish is so minimal because we don't get to speak it every day, so what you learn goes away very quickly.
Yeah, it was my problem. I used to be able to speak in German, Spanish, English,
exactly,
several different languages, and boy, I can't even remember English anymore.
Right, but to go down there and have these, you know, the native Costa Ricans are just so friendly. It's amazing. I mean, obviously, there's some crappy ones, but the majority, I feel more comfortable walking and trying to talk to people in Costa Rica than I do in Miami.
Oh, yeah, I've never done well because I go to Miami, I speak English, they don't understand. I speak Spanish, they don't understand.
Yeah.
And in Costa Rica, if you got any Spanish at all, they treat you really well.
Right.
But you were there
if you try.
You were there doing what?
Chasing snakes.
Chasing snakes.
Went with a group of seven people, that were all interested in reptiles. And we ran around and every night with flashlights and headlights and caught snakes. We caught 17 total different species. Three of the species were found by the gardeners and people taking care of the property, so we didn't physically find them, but got to see them and photograph them. But the first night there, I got to see a eyelash viper and a red-eyed tree frog, and that was the two that I wanted to see. So everything after that night was pure gravy. I mean, I was perfectly content within the first 3 hours of being at the lodge. Done.
It was all okay. Yeah. I've been there, seen that, got the t-shirt.
Yeah.
But then you got to see all the other cool stuff, so it was a pretty good trip.
Yeah, my best friend showed up with his wife, and we got to hang out for a few hours, and then a couple days on the end of the trip, and see some other areas. It was pretty awesome. I mean, I just really couldn't have asked for anything cooler to witness and see firsthand in my life.
We've been down there before doing fishing trips.
And there again, that was another trip where that was... catch the rooster fish. Dreamt about it since I was 10 or 11 when you took me down there and fulfilled that goal, and that was a precious moment that will always stay in my mind. You know, it's just absolutely phenomenal.
We still have to do Alaska.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, we're going to try and get that done here pretty quick. Anyway, I guess we got to get to a fishing report. We haven't done one of those since you left, so where are we going to start?
Let's start in the Peace River because it's pretty quiet up there.
Actually, it's the tarpon fishing up. If you go up by the Navigator, and that whole section from the water treatment plant right out in front of there. You've got some tarp, and if you come back down just about a half a mile this side, half a mile, three quarters of a mile this side of the Navigator, the river makes a real deep bend right there, and anchor up on the shallows, throw some catfish tails into the deep spot. Really consistent tarpon up there. Just north of Harbor Heights, they're doing fair on the tarpon, but they kind of come and go. If you get there first thing in the morning, you're going to really whack some tarpon. And you can do the same thing late in the day.
Right.
And we're talking anywhere from 40 to 140 pound tarpon. Guy up there swears he got 180 the other day. So the tarpon fishing up in the river has been pretty good. Trolling the chartreuse bombers, the SICH, been a real good bet for finding tarpon. But make sure you get rid of the barbs on the treble hooks, or as Robert says, take the hook that normally use on a butterfly rig, take both treble hooks off, put the string loop on the back split ring, and use a single hook off the back of it. You cannot put two of those hooks on. You need to just one off the back.
Yeah, they want to tangle on each other.
Yeah, one hook off the back, and it seems to work really good that way if you want to go down a single hook.
Right. It was just modified off of your original idea with the circle hooks right on the split ring, but yeah, this one just seems to...
It does better. The only way the circle hook off the back one did okay is if you use a double split ring, because otherwise it wouldn't turn right.
Right.
And it's been... But the Peace River has actually been doing pretty good. A lot of redfish up there right now. A few snook. You got a little bit of stuff around I-75, but I don't think it's where I would go to try and have a busy day fishing.
Right. Yeah. No, I would just go up there and just look around and enjoy it and take advantage of the beautiful scenery in addition to catching the fish.
Down by 41, we had a bunch of tarpon going. We had that rain a week or so ago, and the river went from 1.5 up to over 4 foot. Now it's back down less than 3, but it's still just clearing up. The fishing will get a lot better here over this week because the river should be down. I'm going fishingfranks.com right now.
Should be coming down exponentially. You know, we've had no rain inland or around us. You know, but I know last week it was pretty silted up, so it must have been a couple really, really good rains that came through.
Oh, man, it went up over 4 feet.
Wow.
And it went up almost 5 foot towards the end. And let's see, right now we're back down to 1.5 feet, so there's almost no water coming down the river.
Right.
It's going to clean up every day. It's going to get a little cleaner, a little more salt up here.
Well, and it should clean up big time, too, after this hill tide with the full moon and everything. It's our strongest tides of the month. I mean, you're looking at 2.5, 3 feet of water moving out in a course of like 5 hours.
And we've got Thursday, it's supposed to be 5 to 7 mile an hour winds.
Right.
And it's going to be a gorgeous day Thursday. It's the best, if you're going to play hooky, that's the day to do it, because Thursday is going to be our best day. And the fishing should be actually great right up here by the bridge, the cobia, the sharks, and all that. They should all be moving back up.
Yeah, they've been down.
What's going on in Port Charlotte Canals?
Port Charlotte Canals have been a little quiet unless you're fishing right at the mouth. You know, the mouths of the canals have been pretty good for some mangrove snapper, a lot of little snook, some miscellaneous redfish. A few oddball trout, but very, very few. But the ones they are catching seem to be a little on the bigger side.
Alligator Bay, right by Port Charlotte Beach, has been doing good on cobia, small sharks.
And some redfish.
You got a lot of redfish over there by the boat ramp off the end of the point of the beach. If you go all the way down to the left of the swimming area, you got some nice redfish over there, too.
Yeah, yeah. Between there and Grassy Point is always a real good spot. It's just weird because that spot is usually really, really good in the hottest, crappiest part of summer. You know, like late August all through September.
Right.
For some reason, that seems to be one of those consistent spots for them, which is weird. It's kind of neat, though. You know, and then I hear over there around Hog Island and up in the Myakka Cutoff, there's still been some snook, some redfish, a few pompano on the Hog Island side. A lot of cobia cruising that grass flat and some tarpon, but incidental.
Now, Myakka River, I'm hearing a lot of stories of small sharks on the Hog Island side.
Yeah.
Out 3, 4, 5 feet of water.
Mm-hmm.
Up in the shallows, in that, you know, 2 to nothing feet of water, a lot of redfish over there.
Right.
We had a couple of guys, commercial fishermen, went over there, and we're looking for, I forget whether mullet or ladyfish or something. I don't remember what they were going to catch, but pretty much they were consistent into the redfish, and they ended up abandoning it because there's more redfish than anything else there. Over at Aljamain in the evenings, we still got some tarpon, some great snook fishing right now.
Really good.
And I think a lot of the fish out of the Myakka mistake algae bean for the Gulf of Mexico. They've traveled so many miles to get down the river that they're going to stop and spawn right there.
Right. And it's a, you know, and the cool thing about algae bean is its own little micro environment because of all the structure in such close proximity. And if you got a dry year, there's a lot of stuff that grows on all that. Because, I mean, you got the original bridge, it's been there for decades. The old trestles that have been there for, what, 100 years?
Yeah, the railroad trestles have been there for 100 years, and many, many, many pilings outside the ones you see, because they never took the old pilings out, they just put new ones next to it, and new ones next to that, and new ones next to that.
Right.
And even underneath the new car bridge, now we've got two car bridges, the old railroad trestle, plus underwater there's a ton of pilings and everything else underneath there, because things have been going on there for, you know, more years than what we know about. And believe it or not, that's the only Civil War battle fought here, because we were part of the North. Port Charlotte, Fort Myers were northern held. We were not part of the South. And the only Civil War battle was right there in Algae Bean.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Yeah, there was, you know, a couple dozen guys involved. You know, squad from the Confederate and a squad from the Union Army met there, and I'm sure to them, very intense battle, but for the rest right. of us, it's not even a footnote in history, hardly. It took me forever to... I found it on a random page somewhere. But in one of the only Indian battles, they had an Indian uprising, and they went around, did some burned cabins and stuff like that a little bit, and they went looking for them up the Myakka, never found them. And then when they were building that whole industrial park up there in Murdoch, they found a big Indian encampment, hushed it all up so they could keep building.
Right.
But and if you think about it in terms of a couple hundred years ago, that, you know, being a mile away from something was like being 100 miles away.
Oh,
you never know they were there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's such a... I mean, it was all marsh and mangroves and... Holy crap, I can't even imagine back then.
Yeah, imagine the bugs that were there. By all accounts from the pioneers, early diaries and everything, they said no one lived inland because if the isolation didn't make you crazy, the bugs would.
Right.
And can you imagine the no-see-ums back then?
I can't even fathom that.
It's bad enough where we're going now, and which is a tour down the West Wall. And the West Wall is going to be cleaning up, getting real nice. A lot more fish are going to come onto it here over this week as the outgoing currents aren't bringing fresh water with it anymore, so you're going to see the west side picking up a lot of redfish in the mouths of some of the creeks, back up in the creeks. We got some cobia out on the outside of the bar cruising up and down, tarpon out there in about 5-6 feet of water, pretty steady.
Yeah, they've been pretty consistent over there on that side, you know, basically between the 20-foot hole and the wall, but mainly closer to the bar than anything else.
Right up by the bar, but they're, those fish that are sitting on the bar, that is double tough to get them to bite.
Yeah.
Really tough. You need dead bait, live bait, crabs, fish, throw the kitchen sink at them because there's no way to tell what they're going to do. And you got floats, you got free line, you got bottom, you got to cover it all and really get a just a smorgasbord and hope they're going to want one of those.
Right. And you got to be stealthy too. They are a little spooky in that shallower water.
And you got to be sitting still. You can't be trolling motor after them. You got to be just sitting like a hole in the water.
Yep.
Coming down to Cape Hayes, we got a lot of stuff in Cape Hayes. A
lot of small sharks scattered all over on that bar. Some pretty decent trout.
Pompano, permit. Snook, big old snook laying just outside the bars.
Yeah, those snook are cruising up and down that trough big time, coming out of the Myakka and the Peace and even out of all those back creeks on the west wall, and they're staged up everywhere around there from Muddy Cove all the way over to Bull Bay, just out in front. And you go by and you may not see one, come back 20 minutes later and there's 20 sitting in that same spot.
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive.
Cape Hayes is an amazing area right now. It's for the last couple of weeks, it's really been kind of the go-to spot, the break between freshwater runoff and the saltwater, you know, inflow from the Gulf. Turtle Bay's doing okay. Some redfish up near the back over on, you got little pockets of, you know, like little tiny bays in there, and there's some redfish in there. More snook seem to be over close to the transition between Turtle and Bull Bay, the Eagle's Nest, and up in there there's a lot more snook over there.
Right.
What's Bull Bay doing?
That's kind of the same thing as Turtle Bay. You got fish moving all over the place. There's more snook at the mouths than there is up inside. The redfish are scattered in those deeper little sand holes and all that back corner where all those little houseboats are kind of sitting and rotting away.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of little and decent-sized redfish around them, but there's been some good mangrove snapper underneath those shacks right at the entrance.
And if you go just to the outside of that, Kaopalu is the dividing island between which forms Bull Bay. And between Devilfish and Kaopalu, there's some big schools of redfish kind of going along through there. If you're coming around from Devilfish and you're looking at Kaopalu, from there all the way out to your left, and you go around, there's a little island with a split between it. There's some redfish there. There's a bunch of potholes there. And those schools of redfish seem to be going back and forth about three-quarters of a mile on their trip each day. Right. So start over there, feed at Kaopalu, go north, half, three-quarters of a mile, work through the shallows. As the boat traffic picks up, they seem to kind of be ping-ponged back over towards Kaopalu, which doesn't get the boat traffic around it.
Right. And that's a beautiful area, too. I mean, the grass flats are so awesome right through there. And if you get out a little bit further, just on the outside edge in there, between there and Sandfly, there's been a few bigger trout, some Spanish mackerel, a lot of small sharks, you know, out there in like that 4 to 5 feet of water range.
Right.
And that's kind of the consistent thing all along that whole intercoastal. If you're out there in that 4 feet to 5 feet of water anywhere where there's some deep grass, not very many trout, but they are big. They're running in that 20 to 25 inch range. The Spanish mackerel are kind of scattered with them. Most people don't realize how many trout there really are there, but they're usually apprehensive to throw lures or jigs because the Spanish mackerel will whack you off real quick.
Yeah.
You know, they're good at doing that, but
Toothy.
Very, very, very toothy.
Yes.
It's well worthwhile.
We're going to avoid the whack you off and go to toothy.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was going to let that one go by, but you had to just dig
it. It was just too tough.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was an easy bullseye.
You got Perkins Cove over there with a huge amount of snook in it. Just loaded up with bunches of snook. You got a little bit of black drum up in there. You got a lot of other fish. And then over by Placida Trestle, lots of shark activity over there.
A lot of shark activity, you know, night and day both have been really, really incredible for all sorts of sizes, from 2 foot to 7 foot. A lot of scattered tarpon throughout there, the big mangrove snapper hanging out around the docks.
Even got a couple of scattered sheephead, a little bit of drum. There's
still a mixed bag.
I've heard of a couple of grouper being caught in that area.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually been pretty good.
Right, and then right there is all the way up into Lemon Bay is kind of the same thing. You know, it's that intercoastal deal, fish in that 4 to 5 feet of water. The redfish have been scattered in there. Most of them have been a little tougher.
Well, if you go back into right by Placida, just outside the boat ramp, if you come out of the boat ramp and go to the right, you're going to go over a sandbar, and then there's a deeper area right along the shoreline, and that's had some amazing redfish in it.
Still there,
still doing good. I think the school moved out and another one moved in, but they just started picking those up just a few days ago. Guy was in telling me about it. Yeah, I told him about going back there, and he'd gone about a week ago, didn't do much. A few days ago, he says, okay, now I believe you. You know, he says, I went there the first time, didn't catch anything. He said, I went back this time, and we whacked him.
Hey, at least he was one of the smart ones and went back for a second go at it to check it out again. You know, a lot of guys just ignore spots. You know, I didn't catch anything there, I'll never fish that again.
Well, if you get up around Stump Pass, you got some nice fishing around Stump Pass right now. A lot of snook, some sharks going through. If you get over into Ski Alley, you've got some assorted ladyfish, other things. And going up by the Tom Adams Bridge, the fishing's been pretty good up there.
Yeah, that's another one that's been pretty consistent right there with Placida. You know, a lot of sharks of assorted sizes, some tarpon, a few cobia, some decent whiting. You know,
well,
that
Tom Adams Bridge on Beach Road there, that's kind of the dividing line between Lemon Bay and that lower half. And like you say, the fishing, I'm sorry, I was looking on the maps.
Okay.
What were you saying?
Well, the fishing there is just really good because, you know, once again, you know, just like you said, it's kind of the dividing boundary. It gets some weird currents that eddy in there because you got some of the currents coming in from Little Gasparilla Pass, some of the currents coming in from Stump Pass. So it kind of creates a little bit of a weird mixture at times, which I think kind of gets the fish to hang out there a little bit more because it draws in some of the oddball bait fish. And also being in close proximity with the drawbridge there, you've got all that added structure too. So lots of places for all sorts of critters to hide and ambush points and everything else.
I would say the most forgotten spot there is up along the Barrier Islands. When you're working the backside of Manasota Key, it's got some real nice troughs in it, absolutely loaded with snook. And
And those troughs are unbelievable with how much they drop off. I mean, you're in 2 feet of water and it'll make a 8 to 12 inch drop. You know, it's not a little subtle thing of, you know, 3 or 4 inches. There's some of those things are pretty significant drops.
Yeah, like 8 feet.
Yeah.
So anyway, coming back outside, if you're going to walk the beaches right now, and this pretty much is going to hold true whether you're walking the beach at Manasota Key all the way down to Little Gasparilla, Palm Island, Captiva, Sanibel. You've got Permit, Pompano, more Permit than Pompano. I don't know what's up with that.
A lot
of Permit, but we're seeing Permit going up and down the beach. We've got a little bit of pockets of whiting here and there, but a lot of sharks. Tarpon doing, I mean, they're making that run back and forth along those beaches.
Bouncing up and down.
But
there's also been some incidental catches of small bonefish. You know, a lot of guys are confusing those baby bonefish with whiting because they're just so, you're so programmed to catching whiting, you don't think about it. It's like just, it's just another silverfish with its mouth on the bottom, but it looks a little odd, but you don't even give it a second thought and you throw it back.
And it looks a lot like a whiting. I think the only real difference is that little barbel on the chin.
Right.
I mean, other than that, there's not a lot of difference between a bonefish and a whiting at a casual glance.
Yeah, at a casual glance, nothing.
If you're looking for it and you're thinking bonefish, I mean, you can get all excited because it's been weird that over the last few years we've had more and more bonefish coming up here. Even with our cooler temperatures, I would have thought they would be staying more south, but they seem to be just, you know, I don't know what it is, but we've had more bonefish caught this year than we had the last year, more than last year than the preceding year. Every year it seems to go up.
I think people are paying attention more to it, too. I think that those fish have been there for a long time. I just think we're getting more
aware of what our fish are.
More aware of what it is. You know, the guys are starting to hear, oh, no, we catch bonefish here on occasion. So they're starting to pay a little bit more attention to it and going, well, maybe that was a bonefish that I caught last year that I thought was a little funny.
Yeah, it's the round nose, the, you know, the sleek body. They have a different dorsal fin. It's, if you look the two up, you see they don't look anything alike. But when we talk about casual glance, you're out there and you catch fish. Okay, it's a little gray. All right, you take it off, you throw it back in the water. It was whiting.
Yeah, exactly. I think the primary difference is if you feel them, the whiting actually has a little bit more kind of keeled scales, a little bit, so to say, a little bit more texture to it, versus a bonefish is just a little bit more streamlined. It's not slimy. It's about the same as a whiting, but it doesn't quite have the texture to it when you grab it.
Smoother.
Yeah.
So anyway, watch for them, and you'll definitely see the difference once you get them. And both are possible. Wiggle jigs work best across the bottom, little tiny piece of shrimp for them, and you will catch both species with that same thing. You can use the standard pompano, crazy, silly, willy, actually banana jig, and little tip of shrimp on it. The ones with the feather on it seem to do better than the ones that are straight for as far as the bonefish goes. The whiting, I don't think, care either way.
No, I don't think so.
But working our way out in the Gulf of Mexico, it's Paradise City out there right now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's lumpy as all get-go. So, I mean, as this wind dies throughout the week, it's definitely going to be worth going out and checking out. You got the mangrove snapper dumping out of all the harbors and intercoastal and everything else. So the passes are loaded up, but they're moving offshore to the nearshore reefs. Palm Island ferries loaded. Trembly, Novak, Mary's, Helens. I mean, all the nearshore reefs within 9 miles. Got some quality mangs on it from like 1.5 to 4 pounders.
Which does bring up some of the grouper and stuff because the feed is on.
I mean, absolutely.
They've got a lot of food coming out there. And so you're going to see more of the Goliath grouper, more of the gags, a little bit of the red grouper. Yep. Everything's going to, you know, kind of, as all these snappers start boiling out of the harbor to go and live their adult life in the Gulf, it's surprising how many fish do that grow up and get to be a certain size and want to go to the Gulf. Even snook do it.
Oh, yeah. Snook will go out there 15, 20 miles on a reef.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you go snook fishing down Marco Island, you know, Estero and that, the better snook fishing is outside on the reefs.
Yeah. It amazes me that those guys have got it dialed in so well where they can target fish on every reef down there, and yet the guys here, it's always incidental catches.
Right.
You know, and I think they hook a lot more than they think. You know, it's just that they get railed into the structure right away.
Well, these are big snook that go out there. The little ones stay inside. But once they get up over 40 inches, those... there was a 56-inch snook caught in a shrimp net a few years ago. I mean,
right.
Big, huge snook. I mean, over 50 pounds. Obviously not in the record book because it was caught with shrimp net. But, I mean, here's some amazing snook being taken out there.
Absolutely. You know, and that also brings in the cobia, the barracuda, the sharks, the tarpon, the permit.
We got permit on the reefs. The tarpon are out there in the Gulf, I would say, what, 3 to 9 miles out?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
They're out there their ways doing the baby dance right now. They're in their first spawn session or second spawn session, one of the spawn sessions. So get out there and go deep for those tarpon. And they're hard to see. It, you know, you got to really kind of know what you're looking for to go after them out there.
Right.
But coming back along to Punarasa, Redfish Pass, hearing a lot of good stories down there, everything from snapper to tarpon.
Yep.
Captiva's got actually almost as good a tarpon population as Boca has right now. And
I would honestly say easily as good, but I would say better in the aspect of no crap to put up with.
Yeah,
it's just easier going.
Yeah, you can fish any way you want to, and there's nobody there complaining and yelling at you.
Right.
So if you looking for some of the passes, Captiva's probably next best past Boca. Redfish doing okay. Punarasa, I would say Boca number one, Captiva two, Punarasa three, Redfish four, Gasparilla Pass five.
I'd say that'd be a pretty good
tarpon
good
aspect
assessment.
Wise.
Absolutely.
Now, coming back up around St. James City, Mouth Coosahatchee down there in Sanibel.
All of those deeper grass flats have got some really, really nice trout in them. Once again, small sharks, Spanish mackerel, all that's kind of mixed in. Some nice tarpon scattered throughout the entire intercoastal and that deeper trough, especially around Captiva Rocks there.
Ton of snook just to the Sanibel side of the Miserable Mile there, and lots of snook down there.
I mean,
they're all out there getting ready to spawn. Coosahatchee's just, the snook are vacating by the minute, getting out there to do the baby thing on the island, so it's really great snook fishing.
That southern tip of Sanibel has been ate up with some really, really nice snook with the beach fishermen at night.
I would go walking along the beach, and my number one thing I think you're going to catch right now is snook, and I'd be taking either MR-17, the Storm, or, I don't know, pretty much any kind of little paddle-tailed jig body out there is going to just whack those snook. And
absolutely,
you can do that from Sanibel all the way up past Venice. I mean, they're just all along the beaches, that 2-3 feet of water right off of the sand. And so don't be casting out too much. They're literally, you stand there in the water cooling off, look between your legs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Often there's a snook laying right there.
And the water is going to clear up, and now that this wind is going to back off, so you're going to see it going from that cloudiness to start clearing up big time.
And you should be able to see them and cast to them and wait till they get a ways away from you. But
just use a longer, lighter leader because you got all open water, so there's no sense in horsing them.
And St. James City, just south of Matt Lachey, tons of redfish back there in the slow zones.
Mm-hmm.
You get off of the main boating channel and get back into the slow zones, and you get a lot of redfish back in those flats. Coming north up to the Indian Fields, absolutely great redfish back up in there. Not so much snook going on anywhere inside there.
I think they seem to be kind of quiet there.
I think they've moved towards the islands a little bit better. Tarpon, though, mornings, evenings, around the bridge, nighttime.
All those Cape Coral bridges, or all those Cape Coral canals, too, got a lot of juvenile tarpon in them, and even some sub-adults, you know, 80-pounders.
Yeah, and you can do the same thing around Cape Coral Bridge and on the Coosahatchee evenings. Take the Bomber, the 16 size SICH, or try a 3/4 ounce rattle trap around some of those deeper ones. That bleeding, shiner bleeding, whatever it is, color is actually working pretty good.
Yeah,
that and
cool
the straight
color.
Out chartreuse.
That's a cool color too. I like that rattle trap a lot.
Yeah, it really works. Getting back up around, we were doing Matt Lachey, coming a little bit further north, Two Pines, the Burnt Store.
Same thing going on. You got a lot of snook moving down off the east side and out of all those canals in Pirate Harbor, Alligator Creek, PGI, all those fish are kind of fluctuating all along there. But
coming from the south from Matt Lachey, coming from the north from Burnt Store.
Yeah, and they're just grouped in little groups. So you go by the spot, once again, no fish. 5 minutes later, 20 fish.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be real diligent watching and checking out everything that's moving on.
And as the water's murky, those little dimples on the flats out in front of Two Pines and out between there and Burnt Store, there's tons of snook laying in those flats.
Absolutely.
And redfish, but you drive by them because it's just in the open. It's in the middle of nothing, and there's no reason to stop there. So right. People drive over them all day, but they're stop out three quarters of the way from land out to the bar and just toss some baits, throw some lures, or just drift across there casting in front of you with a storm or mirror lure, any of those baits, they're going to work great out there.
And the cool part is with the snook, especially this time of year, this is the one time of year where you can really get into snook with cut bait. You can be out there targeting redfish, casting sand holes with cut ladyfish or even a cut blue crab and have a really pretty quality snook eat it.
Oh, yeah. The blue crabs especially.
Yeah.
Now,
I mean, it's always funny, people just get stumped by the fact that a snook will eat a blue crab, but
they will
eat it in a heartbeat if they can get a chance to.
If you come just north of Pirate Harbor, go up about three islands, get behind the islands, you got some massive schools of redfish there.
Yeah.
Massive schools of redfish. The reds are just amazing back there right now. And cut bait, crab, shrimp, mix and match. If you get bait fish, fine, just still go for them. Variety of lures, jerk baits doing fairly well. Top water is okay, but you're going to find them with the top water and catch them on something else.
Right. You know, it's, and every one of those little islands back in there seem to be holding some redfish. And the cool part about the flats is this time of year, anywhere you fish right now, so many guys are fixed on the tarpon or the sharks that there's not as many people fishing the flats.
No, you can get back in the flats and actually find a parking spot.
Yeah, exactly. In another month and a half, people get bored with that and go back at that. But these next few weeks are going to be really incredible with the
amount of available fish and available places to fish.
Right. You know, just so,
I think that's what you were trying to say.
Yeah. So little pressure out there on them right now. It's awesome. You know, it's.
Well, the wind's been keeping everybody off. Everybody's, all the fish have had a chance to kind of calm down, settle down, get into feeding habits.
Right.
And if you're going back, go slow. Go trolling motor, yep. Push pole. If you're going to go back with your boat, see if you can get the wind to push you.
Right.
The quieter you go in, the better your fishing is going to be. The outboard isn't as bad when you have a lot of boats, but the less boats out there, the quieter you've got to be to get there.
Yep.
When there's a lot of boats around, the outboard doesn't do that much spooking because they're so used to the noise. But the quieter it is, the quieter you got to be.
Absolutely.
Now, off of Jug Creek, you heard some good fishing up around Jug Creek, Jug Creek Shoals, back up on the flats.
Yeah, there's been some whiting scattered around on those sand flats. There's been a lot of really good trout, not quality number or quantity numbers, but quality fish.
Yeah.
Spanish mackerel, bluefish, a lot of miscellaneous size sharks from 2 to 5 foot. Same thing with some snook. There's still also, you know, it's been a whole mess load of fish.
So what would you sum up now? You get out in the middle of the harbor. We've got the tarpon holes out there. There's some shark, there's some cobia, there's some tarpon out there. If you were going to go out in the holes and fish right now, say artificial, what would you do?
My first choice is going to be a bait buster or a storm swim shad. You know, those are just, you can cover a lot of area with those and work so many different depths with them.
Well, one of the things that I was talking to Rob McHugh, and he's like the king of the up harbor tarpon over here. Like Dwayne is out by the Gulf, the Pass, and Intercoastal. But he's saying throw it out and let it get down, rip it up, and then just very slowly wind it back. But Rob's been on a lot of fish. He's probably the most consistent out there. And
that's because he doesn't sleep.
No, he doesn't sleep. He's got 4 months a year. He's out there
22
hours a day.
I mean, the man is an animal when it comes to that stuff. He's pretty amazing. And I would do the same thing. Another thing that's totally underutilized out there is taking one of those swim baits. You know, I don't care if it's a storm or a bait buster. Put it under a bobber. put it 3 or 4 feet under a bobber out the back of the boat while you're drifting and casting your other stuff. Works phenomenally well.
Now, I'm going to say if you're going to do that, I would probably put a little scent on it. I would probably do a little bit of Procure, a little bit of one of the scents, be it the coffee smell, anise smell, any of the scents to train just a tiny bit.
Right.
Just to give it that little enhancement, because the bobber, there's usually enough chop on there to keep it jigging, to keep it bouncing. But, and it's way easier in a live bait. But I like to have that little tiny bit of smell on it.
Yeah, it's not going to hurt by any stretch.
We've got a big load of power baits coming in because everybody's... They're talking about doing the jig under the floats, and the power bait already has the smell in it.
There you go.
And so hopefully in the next day or two, we'll be reloaded with power baits because just cleared us out, wiped us out of them, and a lot of them are doing what you said. I was kind of waiting to talk about that till we actually had the baits to do it with.
Yeah, but those bait busters, Robert showed me that trick 8-9 years ago, and it just works superbly. Having that power bait will just be a 100% added bonus.
Yeah, but if I was doing the bait buster, I'd put a little bit of smell on it. Mm-hmm. Something. I don't think it matters whether it's a shrimp smell, a crab smell, a fish smell. I think just a little bit of added scent to it, because they're going to come up and look at it, and they're biting so slow right now. I would really like to have something to eliminate that human odor off of it.
Absolutely.
Wipe the leader with it. Get your smell off the leader. Get it off of the bait. And don't put any on the bobber.
No.
Not on the bobber.
Don't want any on the bobber at all.
But your leader and all that. And if you're fishing 3-4 feet below there, I would. That's the depth of my leader. I don't want more leader than I've got underwater. I want to put that float right immediately above the knot and or swivel and keep it right there. And that way, everything in the water is fluorocarbon.
There you go. I like that idea a lot.
So whatever depth you're going to fish, that's the depth of your leader.
Yep.
No, we are speaking tarpon. Now, the neat thing about this is it will work on cobia. It will work on most of the other fish. It's kind of tarpon on the brain right now because that's what it is. We just put up we're putting up another tarpon map here. Did we do the tarpon map this morning? We did a tarpon map this morning.
Yeah, we updated that this morning.
So you got a new tarpon map up. We're going to try and get that a little more updated, at least, once, twice a week, trying to get you guys a little closer to where the tarpon have been. And we got 3 different colored dots on there, least, better, and best bets. So you can kind of keep up on where that's going.
And they're going to move around a lot right now, too. So even if we update it today, it could all change tomorrow. Because after this hill tide, with them spawning and everything, you've got fish that are going to be dumping in droves.
As soon as you hear about it, let me know so we can update that map, because we got to get that map really updated a lot more this year, and it's becoming a lot more popular because you get to literally see the areas. And don't worry about the exact spot. This is an area thing, if you're in that area close, that the tarpon don't have anchors on them, so they're not in a spot, they're in an area,
right?
And that's what the tarpon maps are meant to do, is give you the area that they're at, show you the better.
It gets you within a visual range of those fish, whether you've got good eyes or a good set of binoculars. You're going to be in the vicinity where you should be able to see fish.
Right. So that's what we're trying to do, is get you close, because that's all you can do.
Right.
There is no go exactly here on this right now.
29.23 west by whatever. Not going to happen.
And if it does, we'll definitely try and let you know. Anything else we need to talk about today?
All the little juvenile tarpon up inside PGI and the mangrove snapper.
Really?
We kind of missed that a little bit.
We didn't do PGI.
Like you said earlier, I think the water temperature is a little chilly, especially after this weird cold front coming through, that the fish are sticking around a little bit longer inside PGI than they normally would.
My wife just came in. You want to say hi? Here, I'll turn that one up for you. There, you can say hi right there.
Good morning.
Good morning. That was good. Nothing like being thrown on the spot, right?
Okay. Back to PGI. A huge amount of snappers in the rim canal, back up in the canals. tarpon seem to be in a lot of different spots. Usually the turnaround canal is
right,
the turnaround really
hot. Basin and Bass Inlet, those are usually your two primary spots for them.
But back on the backside of the Rim Canal, they're doing great. Mm-hmm. Up in the main opening, when you go through ponds and you go straight up in that main opening, there's been some right. tarpon up there.
And it's a fly fisherman's dream, or even if you're not a tarpon fisherman, those tarpon that are in there are in that 3 to 15 pound range. It's just the way the door is vibrating is kind of neat.
Yeah.
So light tackle. Your snook tackle is crazy in there.
Yeah.
You know, you don't
and
need
like you say,
of that.
It's the forgotten fly fishing zone.
Absolutely.
Because they're going to take it best. And Edgewater Lake is, if I was going to take a first time fly fisherman for tarpon to get him kind of into it, mm-hmm. When I was taking people out, I would take them in Edgewater Lake.
Absolutely.
Because wide open, plenty of tarpon to play with, smaller ones, and a 7-8 weight rod, maybe even a 6-7, and throwing small flies at them, and it really worked good over there. Nice. I like ribbon streamers too, which is not your normal tarpon lure, but it does seem to work good back in the canals. But
absolutely.
We're using number 2 to 1-0 hooks. Small stuff, smaller the fly, the more your chance of catching them. Keep in mind, these are not the 180 pounders. When you say tarpon, everybody wants to bring the big clousers and all the rest of those big ones. That is not what you do back here.
Nah, you want the little glass minnow or the little shrimp pattern something.
I don't do the shrimp too much, but I like the glass minnow stuff. Anything with a little bit of shine, small. I don't want the whole thing to be more than 3 inches.
Right.
I do much better on the 2-inch flies, you know, something real small. And it really seems to work better. And I'll go to one end of the lake or the other, let the wind drift me across, or using the trolling motor sparsely.
Yeah, and just enough to keep you under control.
Yeah, and you're better off not blind casting. Once you see them start rolling in a spot, go to that spot and start casting at the rolling ones, and you're going to do better. But it's hard because a weight forward line lets you carry it, but if you got an intermediate sinking line, I think you do even better. If you can get it down just a little bit, put a little lead wrap on the end of your line. If you're using a floating, get it just under the water a little bit, and you're going to do a lot better.
I like that idea.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the old guy message for today.
No, it's a good idea. I like that idea. That's a good concept right there.
So anyway, a good fly for them, believe it or not, is the teasers off those crazy jigs.
Yeah,
they actually work really well. I do like to add a little mylar to it, or a little bit of ribbon. I don't know why, but I just have always done better with those fish. I think I got it from doing gar upriver on fly rods. We would do the gar with red ribbons and little strips of mylar off it, and did a lot better than just having the standard bucktail or smaller patterns. But anyway, getting back up,
We covered most of it.
Yeah, I think activity-wise, just off the east side would be your best activity spots for right now. I don't really know which way the wind's blowing. I guess I can just bring up fishandfranks.com and check out the wind, and I think once we get that out of the way, I think we're going to be good. Okay, live weather. All right, let's see what we're doing. It's coming out of the northeast right now, 8 miles an hour, gusting 14, so northeast, it's pretty much a east side of the harbor day. You can hide anywhere around Alligator Creek all the way down that east side. And if it does pick up bad in the afternoon, you can still get back through Alligator Creek, Poacher's Cut, to get back up to this side.
Right.
So, good safe place.
Yeah, you might get bounced a little bit going from point A to point B, but once you get there, it's going to be nice.
It's going to be a nice day.
Plus, take advantage of the wind. Another 2 weeks, everyone's going to be going, when is it going to be a little breezy? We should start the boat and turn on the air conditioner.
Yeah, it's going to be real hot in a few weeks. So right now, we got a little bit of paradise down here. Temperature right now is, oh my goodness, it's 76 degrees. You couldn't ask for more perfect. 76 degrees, we got a breeze blowing. Some might call it a wind, but we do have, you know, it's going to be nice, cool, comfortable out there. Remember your sunblock, because even though it's cool and comfortable, you're going to burn like a toast on a hot pan. So
yep, in a heartbeat.
I guess we can wrap it up with that. Fish and Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, and I guess that's it for this edition of Radio Fishing. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for clicking on us. Any last words? I'm going to say hi to anybody. You're an old man now. You had a birthday.
Yeah.
Happy birthday to you.
I even
Happy
took a 5-minute nap yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah, I noticed that. It was over on the line machine, right?
Yeah. Yeah, nice. Nice.
Anyway, I know yesterday was your day off. Well, some of the rest of us have to work. Good to be king, right?
Yeah. Right. Hey, you have the opportunity. You just got to be here.
All right. Well, anyway, guys, Radio Fishing, thanks for listening. See you in the next one. Bye-bye.